When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Clear the Cache. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And of course, with me again is Jesse Bach. You can find him on Twitter at Planet_Fatness. And guys, I always say that Jesse is the straw that stirs the drink. He's all the muscle behind the show. He's the driving force. And because of that, today it feels like we might get a Flu Game Jordan episode out of Jesse. He's mildly under the weather, but the superstar that he is, he showed up today to deliver in a big way, because without him, it would just be me talking and I'm not sure what we would get done. So Jesse, if we get any coughs on this episode, a potential sneeze, we know and we're assuming that you're COVID-free, but I just want to let everybody know that you're out here giving it 110, even when you're feeling like you're at 60.
Did Jordan have a sore throat game, like a sore throat, mild cough game besides the flu game? Because that's probably a fair description of how this episode's going to go. Don't worry, guys. I was a little concerned at first, not going to lie, because some of my girlfriend's family members were starting to experience, like, and them and I were starting to experience similar symptoms around the same time, just like random, out of nowhere, sore throat, slight cough. So I took a day off work just to play it safe, got tested for COVID, fortunately came back negative. So no post-national COVID. Thank God. I just wanted to play it safe. So if you guys are, and I'm fully vaccinated, by the way. So if you guys are experiencing any symptoms whatsoever and you have to interact with other human beings outside of your household, or if you have human beings inside your household that are at high risk and you all of a sudden start experiencing, you know, cold or flu-like symptoms, don't hesitate to get tested. Just PSA on that. Fortunately, just a sore throat, mild, annoying cough show.
Well, and hopefully, hopefully I can get rid of all the coughs. It's fine. It doesn't matter. Okay. There's podcasts out there that have the sound of an industrial fan going in the background. People leave their windows open as public city buses drive by, dogs barking. People are recording through their headphones or computer and don't realize that their mic isn't recording. So there's many other concerns in the world of podcasting, and I think we're going to be okay. But Jesse, I've had people hit me up on Twitter and they're like, Nate, they're like, what happened with the garage sale? What happened with the garage sale guy? You were hot. You were on it. You got this crazy deal set up and you said that there were more rookies to chase. What's the update on that? And Jesse, I've been going back and forth with this guy. At this point, it's like trying to acquire a home. It's not the price of the home. It's the back and forth bullshit to just try to like seal the deal, because I think this guy doesn't want me to just buy singular items out of this box. He wants me to buy the whole box. And there's like a bunch of Maglio Ordonez and stuff in there that I don't want. And I'm like, right? Yeah, he was PCing him pretty hard. So I'm like, listen, guy. I'm like, here's the deal. I go, I will give you X amount of dollars for these cards. He set a price tag. It's a little higher than I wanted. So we're going to go back, meet one more time. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to tell him exactly which cards I want, because there are great cards in there. Again, super rare David Ortiz rookies that like on the spot I'm looking up that raw are going for hundreds. And obviously when they gem out, they're going for, you know, thousands. And there's lots of different cards in here. I mean, again, this guy essentially was like a safety deposit box for the last 30 years and just held these cards, and here he is flipping them. And I probably should just pony up and buy the whole thing, because really if one or two of these cards gems out, I've paid for the entire box and then you're sitting on 200 other cards and it's house money. But the type of person I am, the people that we are, we haggle everything. We go into no haggle situations and attempt to haggle, Jesse. It's what we do. It's innate. It's in our nature. Am I playing this wrong, Jesse? Should I find it within myself to just pay the asking price or close to it so that I can just secure the bag?
Depending on what's in the box, I mean, it might make financial sense to just get the box, because once you grade everything out and you end up selling that for a pretty decent profit, all of a sudden you're basically, like you said, playing with the rest of the box as house money. You could do whatever you want at that point. I mean, if anything gets crazy at a random point in time in the hobby of like Dave, let's say there's David Wells cards in there, and for whatever reason David Wells is in the news, or David Wells cards are just going insane. It doesn't have to be David Wells.
No,
I'm just saying.
Poll.
But like, we saw something similar to this. Although baseball doesn't quite carry the same weight as basketball cards do right now, but back in February and March of this year, you saw almost everyone from the 90s in basketball just going up in value. I'm such an idiot, because I had maybe like 10 raw Sean Kemp rookie cards when they must have like 10x'd in value. Of course they're raw, they're not graded. That they're cards that me and my brother collected when we were both kids. I should have just flipped them then and there. And that's, I mean, don't get me wrong, Sean Kemp, of course, like perennial all-star in the 90s, and he was like one of the most exciting players in that generation, but I mean, I'm just saying that pretty much like whoever can get hot at any point, especially if they're, you know, their careers are obviously well established, they've long been retired, but they still have a fan base. So maybe David Wells wasn't the best example, but maybe a really popular slugger from the 90s could make the whole purchase very worthwhile for you. So it might not be the worst idea just to buy the box outright. Definitely try to, I mean, we are haggling people, so I would try to avoid paying full sticker price if you're able to talk him down. Because it sounds like you guys have a decent relationship, and I feel like just offering 50% of what he's offering you the whole box for, I wouldn't say go quite down that route, unless if you didn't know the guy and just started talking to him and just to start a conversation. But it sounds like you've been talking to this guy for at least a couple weeks or months, so it's probably better not to lowball him. But if you could save like 20 up to 25% on the box, and you think you can make some money after grading some cards, then go for it.
I think that's the play. I got to reach out to him one more time and try and lock this thing down, because I would like to get these cards in my possession. I've been fairly obsessed with the 90s baseball recently, and I think there's a lot of value to be had there. I mean, again, all it takes is one of these Gary V tweets one of these days too, if he just happens to mention one of the guys in that box or 90s baseball at all. I feel like that's on his scheduled tweets list. It has to be coming at some point, Jesse. He's making his way around the horn, as some would say, and I think he's going to make his way back to baseball. And as you said, we are hagglers. It is what we do. It's in our blood. Jesse, takeaways from the National and the interview with John Scanlon last week. Did you get some sort of response, or did you hear response from listeners? And what were some of your takeaways from the National in general?
So John did a fantastic job, by the way, last week. That was by far, like, no offense to our other guests, like we've had great guests on so far on this show, out of the three interviews that we've done, but that was probably my favorite, just because of the insane stories that he had ever since like coming back into the hobby like 10 years ago or so. It was just crazy. Like you could literally write if the hobby needed a movie, John could be the star of your movie. Like that's how insane some of the stories that he has ever since he jumped back into it are. But John knocked it out of the park. Honestly, like, he's like, I didn't I wanted him to say as much as he could during the episode, during last week's episode. But honest to God, John is like probably my favorite individual in the hobby ever since I jumped back into it. He is just such a generous dude. He will go out of his way to help you however he can. So I'm sure that there are so many people who have reached out to him after the episode. There are people that reached out to me saying like, holy shit, this interview was like bonkers. It was just crazy. My ears were glued to my phone when I was listening to this when I was driving. So he did a fantastic job. Honestly, like I hope to meet him again in the near future, either at hopefully his show. That would be incredible to go down to Colorado. Or if that's not able to work, which I really hope it does. But if not, then we're just going to see each other in AC 12 months from now, 11 months from now. So I really can't wait to meet that dude again. Like, honest, I'm just happy to call him a friend. And it was great to get him on and get somebody who I think the audience is going to be genuinely excited to hear from if they haven't heard that episode yet. And if you know, assuming we bring him on a second time, like people are going to mark that episode in their calendars. So kudos to him for such a great interview last week. But my takeaways from the National. The sheer amount of people that were there between all 5 days, I don't think it's that far-fetched to say that there were 100,000 plus people there over the course of 5 days. There weren't, I don't know how many people actually stayed Wednesday through Sunday. There were a lot of people that just came in, that flew in Wednesday night, came Thursday, flew out Saturday. There's a bunch of those people. But there's of course a ton more people, or if not the same amount of people that literally went every single day. I went every single day. I road trip to Chicago, got there Tuesday. We stayed until Sunday. So I think Sunday I was only there for like 2 or 3 hours, but and then we road trip back. So I was in it. Like I was legitimately a kid in a candy store there. And that's probably too weak of an analogy, honestly, just because like, I went with my girlfriend and I think two or three of the 5 days she was there with me. And like, if she wasn't paying attention, I was just walking to the next table with my little briefcase of cards. And just like, I was just drooling at like, just going from table to table, and she had to like catch up to me. So, yeah, the amount of people there, it was probably as much, if not a little more than what I was expecting. I was talking to my girlfriend about the show, like prehand, when we were on the way down. She's like, oh, I mean, do you really think there's going to be that many people there? Like, you think people are actually coming to this from like all over the country? Like, I don't even know if there's going to be 20,000 people there. I'm like, babe, please like keep your expectations the way that they are. Just because I want to see the look on your face when you get overwhelmed, when we literally can't move. And that's exactly what happened the first day. It happened right away. So the sheer amount of people that got me very excited. What else? There were probably the most amount of dealers, I would guess, this year than previous years. They definitely utilized the hell out of the space. So they had something for a little bit of everybody. There were of course people that weren't even there for the cards. They were there for memorabilia and getting their stuff signed by either current or past like former athletes, just because they're memorabilia collectors, and that's just what they do. And the National's honestly a great place for that. And that stuff hasn't like spiked quite the same way that cards has. It's a totally different market. I don't know. I'm sure it'll spike, but I don't know if it'll ever spike quite like cards have. But there was just a ton of excitement for so many for people in so many avenues, whether it be in memorabilia or cards. There was a Breaker Pavilion. I honest to God, guys, I haven't been to previous shows. This was my first National. This was many people's first National. Even people who have been collecting for 10 plus years, this was their first National. So I don't know if there have been like a place for breakers to break at their booths in previous years, but they had a whole pavilion. It was literally called Breakers Pavilion, where they were able to rip product and broadcast on their YouTube channel or Instagram Live or wherever. So that was pretty exciting. It was a good time for breakers and people who love participating in breaks as well. It kind of had a little bit of everything for everyone. Pricing. So for this show, like, I've gone to two shows basically in the month and a half leading up to the National in Philadelphia and Virginia. Those were like 100 to 200 table shows, so they weren't small by any means, but it seems like the pricing was kind of around the ranges of those shows that I've been to. So for a majority of sellers, so in local shows, it really depends on the show, but in order for the sellers to set up, it'll cost them probably a couple hundred dollars for the booth, or at least for their space of the booth. Whereas at the National, for you know, a pretty decent sized booth, it'll probably cost you around $2,000. So understandably, the sellers have to take into account their travel expenses, their hotel stay. They have to take into account everything, including the cost of the booth. So there's going to be some stuff that's priced either the same as it is on eBay or maybe 10 to 20% higher, especially if it's on the more common stuff. So, I mean, it is what it is. I can't really, like, if I was trying to negotiate with the seller and he wouldn't really come down too much from even what, like, eBay comps are, then, you know, I have to walk away. But I have to respect their decision to list them that way, just because they do have to make their money back. So that's totally understandable. But the National, so maybe for trying to find the more readily available stuff, it might not be the best place for that. Honestly, you could just go on eBay. But if you want something that's really, really scarce and just something that really clicks with you, which I was fortunate enough, maybe we'll talk about it later in the show, to find a couple pieces that I literally couldn't leave the show without. At that point, like, especially if the sales history is limited as hell, comps are out the window. So the National, it really brings out some special cards that you might not be able to find again, or that pop up on eBay maybe like twice a year or once a year or once every 5 years. So the National is a great place to find really scarce pieces. And from that point, like, you can kind of negotiate a little bit easier, if anything, than actually some more common stuff. So finding really exciting pieces was definitely a huge part of the show. And I mean, the excitement was just it was incredible. It was like nonstop Wednesday through Saturday. It was just a constant stampede of people every morning. And then Sunday it kind of died down a little bit, just because people were looking to fly out that day. I was even kind of debating myself if I should go Sunday, and I'm really glad I did, just because I was able to meet up with a couple buddies and get some trades done, and obviously say goodbye to John and snap a final picture. So I was happy to go then. One thing that I regret that I wasn't able to do was attend one of the trade nights. So again, I went to the show with my girlfriend, and she's okay on cards. She gets it. But she, like, you know, we're in Chicago. We never go to the Midwest. We've literally gone to like California, Florida, maybe a couple other places, and that's it. We've never been to Chicago. So understandably so, our agreement for the trip was first half of the day is going to be cards. So we're going to go to the convention together. And then second half of the day is Chicago. So we're going to explore downtown. We're going to explore some of the suburbs. And we went to some really great places, had some awesome food and drinks and whatever. But so my time was a little bit limited in the second half of the day in terms of cards. But that's when the trade nights were happening. So they've been advertised like crazy in previous shows, where I believe it's Card Collect, his Instagram handle is Card Collector 2 from Ohio. He has, by the way, I visited his shop, side note, on the way to on the way to the show. But he's been hosting the trade nights at the National for the last, I want to say, two or three Nationals. And they've just, especially from 2018 or 2019 on, they just blew up in terms of the foot traffic there and how many people showed up and stayed for the entire time. So there were it sounds like in previous years, there was only like one really big trade night, maybe a couple smaller other trade nights at some other hotel lobbies or hotel like conference rooms or conference centers. There was a trade night every night at this show. And it was like the amount of people, it like from the pictures that I saw and from the Instagram lives that I saw, it was hard to get around. It was like the national away from the national. It was crazy. The trade nights would start for, depending on the trade night, they would start around like 6 to 8 p.m., something like that. They'd have to kick them out at like 4 o'clock in the morning. It was just that. And this was for multiple trade nights. So I really wish I could have gone to at least one of them, at least the Card Collector 2's trade night. But that's something that I'm going to have to do next year in AC. And I don't really have many excuses just because like, it's AC. No offense to people who live in Jersey, but I mean, it's just Jersey. You know, I live close to it, so I've been to Jersey so many times that it's kind of just, I know what to expect. So there's not too much to explore that I already don't know about. But I mean, AC next year, my focus is going to be solely cards. Like, if my girlfriend is listening to this, I'm sorry. Like, next year, we're literally going to like, we're doing cards like 15 hours a day next year. So, sorry for ranting. That was just kind of my long-winded, list of takeaways that I had from the national.
Listen, man, you have to recap. And with John here, we kind of gave him his space. So you're telling your side of the story. Now, if these trade nights are going till 4 a.m., Jesse, I would just sleep most of the night and casually show up at about 2:30 when everybody's human brain is less functional than it was at about 10 p.m. and start wheeling and dealing with the sharpest brain in the room, right? That might have been the play right there.
Guys, we're trying to increase our actionable content. That's the play right there. Yeah. Sleep. All right, go to the National. Leave at 6 p.m.
Yes.
Go right to your – maybe grab like a quick bite to eat. Go right to your hotel room. Sleep. Yes. Come back at 2 a.m. and then just – you're dealing with zombies.
Rake in the cash. Listen, I don't know why this hasn't come up sooner. It just makes so much sense. Trade night would be so much easier if you were the only guy in the room that had 8 hours of sleep. So, well, listen, Jesse, I wanted to talk about some of the most popular card sales that are taking place right now, because we talk about actionable content, and this has been a subject that you and I have hit on since the origin of this show. And we always sort of have promoted the theory that quarterback is king, right? And it always really has been in terms of ceiling, in terms of floor, in terms of expectation and excitement. It tends to linger with the quarterbacks. And I was doing some research on the Market Movers app to try to validate this. And I was not shocked to see what the current state of card sales by volume actually was, because if you basically sort NFL football and you sort by card volume by player, the first 25 cards of the most volume of sales are quarterback, without a doubt. It is all quarterbacks. But what was really, really shocking in there, as I'm sifting through here, is that more card sales than Carson Wentz are Sam Ellinger and Jacob Eason. Those two guys have sold more cards over the last 30 days than Carson Wentz. What does that tell you about the position that people are trying to take, and these two players in general? I mean, where is your head at on this?
Speculation. It's speculation season. S-Z-N. Speculation season. This is probably about the high point that we'll see for guys like this. So I think people who are transacting regularly in with Jacob Eason and especially Sam Ellinger, Jesus, if they're transacting around those guys, it's just they're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. It's a very dangerous game to play. We've already seen it before with. It wasn't so much speculation. It was actually after the fact, but this is kind of, I mean, you'll kind of get what I'm saying, because this is what people are going for. So when a couple weeks ago we talked about the Cam Akers Achilles tear And all of a sudden, I don't even know. I don't even remember how far we dove into some Darrell Henderson sales, but there was, I think Darrell Henderson's Prism Silver rookie PSA 10 went from like $12 to over $100 in the course of like 36 to 48 hours after the injury. So I think people who are buying up Ellinger and Eason cards are speculating on the fact that Carson Wentz might suffer a setback in his recovery, or come week three, assuming he comes back in on time by week one, he's fully healthy or close to it, and he's out again week three. People are just kind of speculating on that chance of Wentz getting injured, and honestly, it's entirely possible. It's just a very dangerous game to play, just in case if it never happens, because if you're paying, I don't know, I haven't seen the specific high-dollar Jacob Eason and Sam Ellinger. He barely has any, like, graded cards, maybe none, just because he's so raw and he's so new. But if you're, you know, if you're transacting, like, for, like, $500 Jacob Eason cards, $1,000 Jacob Eason cards, you're playing a dangerous game right there. Dude, and like, honest to God, what if he sucks? What if he just starts playing week three and just has a Nathan Peterman level game and throws six interceptions in the first half or whatever? That you're playing a dangerous game there too. Cause even if you sell something on eBay, like the half, the quarter that Wentz is knocked out and he's out for the foreseeable future, Jacob Eason comes in. You have your Jacob Eason card listed on eBay. Someone buys it immediately. There is a chance that, let's say, again, he throws like three or four interceptions that afternoon. You ship it out. They get it. They claim something's wrong with the card because they want their money back, and then they ship it back to you. So you just wasted your time for nothing. So it's just a dangerous game. Just please, like, I understand speculation is kind of like it's in the hobby. There's nothing we can do about it. Honestly, I mean, if anything, it's like, it's a fun thing. It's like, even for people who aren't gamblers in the hobby, for people who have been collecting for years and decades, they still like to, you know, kind of speculate on younger players who, I mean, it's just fun to do. Like, guys, we literally play dynasty fantasy football doing exactly this. It's fun as hell. It's fun as hell on cards too. But when you're dealing with a decent amount of money that could be better well spent, just be careful transacting with guys like that. I know they're quarterbacks move the needle, but just protect yourself.
So use the phrase "be careful." Be careful when playing this game. What if I told you, and you're probably not surprised, that Trevor Lawrence is number four in card sales over the last 30 days with almost 2,400 transactions? But correct me if I'm wrong, Jesse, all we're really looking at this point is score and Prism draft pick cards, which means the product that's available is in a collegiate uniform.
There are... I think there are some pro uni cards out there. Like, for example, I didn't talk about this from the National. So my girlfriend and I had the VIP package tickets, so we didn't have to wait in line when we got into the show. We could just walk right in. But they had every year at the National, they have Panini National VIP packs. So there's literally that's a set. It's called Panini National VIP. And I was able to redeem my vouchers that I got in my gift bag, my VIP gift bag, for those packs. And the top card in every pack that I saw was a Trevor Lawrence in a Jacksonville Jaguars uniform in that set. But, I mean, basically the sets that are out right now, even if they are in his pro unis, guys, as soon as Mosaic's probably going to come out first, then Optic, then Prism and Select interchangeably. Once those products start coming out, and especially, God forbid, like when National Treasures comes out, these products that are being transacted now, especially for Trevor Lawrence, they're just gonna fall by the wayside. It is what it is. Like, people will hit me up on Twitter asking me about Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence or Trey Lance collegiate autograph cards. They're serial number. They're cool cards. Honestly, cool PC pieces if you just want to grab onto them now and hold onto them and not even thinking about selling them. But if you're looking to make money, this is the perfect time to sell. And it doesn't surprise me that, especially Trevor Lawrence is an interesting case just because he signed a deal with Topps around like draft time. I don't know how many of you knew that. Maybe there's a lot of people out there that already bought those Topps cards. So it doesn't surprise me that Trevor Lawrence has an exorbitant transaction volume on eBay just because he has so many freaking cards of him printed out there. So, and honest to God, like even if like he could turn out to be the next Andrew Luck, but I don't know how valuable those cards are going to be long term.
It's interesting. I mean, we've talked about the collegiate uniform card values in the past, and I see it too. I see lots of guys posting pictures of a collegiate uniform auto card, and it's not serialed. And it's like the bottom on these cards falls out as soon as the, you know, majority of their NFL product hits the market. Short of like an ultra rare collegiate card. I think we were looking at the Jacoby Brissett like a couple months ago, right? It was like one of ones. And I think it was like maybe like an Orange Bowl patch or something. I can't remember what it was, but they were one of ones. Like short of these incredibly rare, like national treasure type items or, you know, patch auto type items, like the bottom is going to fall out so fucking hard on these cards, especially when we're looking at a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who has 2,400 transactions, mostly draft picks, at a price of $14 a card. They're already basically nothing in terms of cost. So moving from 14 down to about $3 is not going to be a difficult slide. We're watching cards fall hundreds of dollars. So for this card to fall back 80% to essentially the cost of shipping is not going to be surprising. So all of these guys, you need to temper expectation. If you're looking to just spend some money, and like Jesse said, just rip packs and, you know, and maybe find something to PC, that's one thing. But the odds that you're going to find a card that's going to hold through their NFL career, good or bad, and there's a high likelihood that many of these guys aren't that good. This happens annually. That the card that you're holding is going to have any value. Just know that what you're doing today is going to probably profit you nothing tomorrow. But I don't want to take the fun out of it. Okay, it's the reason I go on rides at the carnival. I know I'm going to throw up. I know I'm going to be sick. I go on them anyways because it's exhilarating. And then I throw up and I feel terrible for a while. And then I might go get an elephant ear. And that's how I recoup. Okay, this is your carnival ride where you barf everywhere. Enjoy it, but know that you're going to barf everywhere, Jesse. Now, you frequent my slabs, right? What's kind of the pulse right there? Is it mostly quarterbacks still today, or what's happening on my slabs?
There was an exciting announcement from Matthew Greene, one of the heads of my slabs. He said, I believe it was either Wednesday or Thursday of this week. So it'll be about like a week. When this episode airs, it'll probably be like a week before this episode aired. My slabs had the highest volume of transactions on their website since early February, when pretty much like that's when February was when the LeBron James Topps Chrome PSA 10 was going for like $40,000. The Michael Jordan Fleer PSA 10 was going for $750,000. Like these monster cards went up 5x in the course of a month, and just that's just so many all-time greats and if you were a fan of just player X in the 90s, that means probably a lot of other people were a fan of that player, and that means their card probably 5x'd in February. So February was just, that was one of the most insane run-ups in the history of the hobby. It probably rivals on, I reference August of 2020 a ton. It probably rivals August of 2020. If not, like, the price increases were that much more drastic in February than they were in August of last year. So the fact that MySlabs came out and saying that they had their highest number of sales that day since early February, it's really saying something. What was actually transacted on the site, which kind of headlined most of the transactions of that day, were quarterbacks and sealed wax. So I'm guessing probably a good amount of the sealed wax was football related. So it sounds like right now we're kind of hitting peak football season. I don't think it's going to let up until maybe week two of the NFL season, when we actually see prices start to, like, I'm not saying crash, but I'm saying normalize, because maybe the run up might have been a little extreme for some cases. But we keep saying quarterback is king, and it's honestly, that's the evidence right there. That's all the evidence I need, really. Like, I transact on my slabs all the time. I have cards that I desperately want on there, and I look at them daily. I for the players that I PC, I search them daily. I look them up on the website daily just to see what else is available. But it's really encouraging just to see that if not the dollar in sales, like the bottom dollar, just as long as the sales volume is there, like, that's what makes me excited about the time frame that we're in this hobby right now, especially for football.
Absolutely. On fire still. I mean, just so much enthusiasm, and we're going to enter the NFL season and it's only going to surge. Now, back to the Market Movers app. I was looking at the most purchased players and their volume, and then I decided, hey, let's look at running back. I'm curious, because running back is a popular position, and I was looking for the most purchased running back over the last 30 days. Now, Jesse, I want you to guess who number one was. I'm going to give you a hint. Number two is Saquon Barkley. But before you guess, I want to mention that this show is sponsored by Underdog Fantasy. Guys, go download the app today and use the promo code UNDERWORLD and get a $25 bonus cash deposit for new players. Jesse, you're all set up. It's all teed up. There's no way you can get this wrong. It's impossible to get this one wrong. Who is the most purchased running back over the last 30 days, non-rookie?
So my guess would be, since I've seen his prices skyrocket ever since last season, they've gone up since last season, whereas with a lot of running backs since last season, their prices have gone down, because running back is a very injury prone position, unfortunately. And there were some players who missed a good chunk of the season last year. So if anything, it's pretty impressive that Saquon rebounded like he did, to the point where I think his prices are actually slightly up from where they were last season, depending on the card that you're looking at. So my guess would have been Derrick Henry.
It's not. He's much smaller than Derrick Henry, in fact, and also much younger than Derrick Henry. It's a good guess. It makes sense, but no, it's not. What if I told you that it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the most purchased running back over the last 30 days? Now, Jesse, as many people know, I died millions of different times last year in the eyes of the fans of fantasy football, but please allow me to defend myself for a moment. Now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was over 1,000 yards from scrimmage last year, which is ultra impressive for a rookie. Okay, that's ultra impressive. So again, I don't know where the narrative got spun that he wasn't good. I'm still fucking shocked by this. Currently, his Underdog ADP is pick 23. So he's going in the first two rounds. Oh, that's weird. So suddenly he's back up in the first two rounds, selling a lot of cards. And let's talk about this for a second, because the big news media doesn't want you to know this. They don't want you to. We're probably going to get canceled on the network. Clyde Edwards played 13 games last year, guys. And I don't know if you know this, but the NFL season's 16 games. He missed three games due to a high ankle sprain. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the player that many of you think was not a successful player last year, scored 176 points. He had three remaining games left in the season. Had he been healthy, if he had scored 42 more points, he would have been a top 10 running back last year in total fantasy points scored. You guys are out of your fucking minds. He's finally selling the way that he's supposed to. All of a sudden, there's this air quote renewed enthusiasm. It shouldn't be renewed. The guy was great. He was already playing exceptionally well. He still plays for the goddamn Chiefs. You guys pretend like he was in a body bag last year and suddenly were like reviving his corpse. And now this year he's supposed to put together a better year. If he puts together a better year than he did last year, he'd be like fucking Jamal Charles. Okay. He averaged 4.4 yards per carry. He's in an exceptional offense. He plays with Patrick Mahomes. I just love that all of a sudden people are like, I'm going to be the bigger man now. Now I'm going to accept the fact that Clyde Edwards might be good. He was good last year.
Small takeaway from that beautiful rant. Jamal Charles cards undervalued. they really are though. They're super cheap. If you want to be like a Jamal Charles super collector, collect the hell out of Jamal Charles. To kind of go through my what my rationale is of why his product is moving fairly steadily in like. That's putting it generously. That's putting it mildly. I mean, like it's moving at like a gargantuan pace. I think there were a ton of people, myself included, that joined the hobby in 2020. So people are kind of running back to the 2020 set as, you know, that's their first football set that they purchased, ever since like coming back, of course. And he was the first running back taken in the draft, and I can't shit on him for how he played last year, just because he played exceptional in the amount of games that he played in, and like I said, he was the first running back taken in the draft, and he plays for the Kansas City Chiefs right next to Patrick Mahomes, so that's kind of a recipe for his cards staying hot, right, or staying very relevant. I mean, right now they're far more relevant. I see like DeAndre Swift collectors now and J.K. Dobbins collectors, and people collect their products. But from the sound of it, and we have data to back it up, it sounds like CEH is a much more popular option at this point.
Listen, Jesse, I got to go back into the fire for a sec. I'm not done putting this fire out in the forest. I'm not done yet. Listen, and everybody wanted to bring up the fact they're like, oh, well, Clyde Edwards, he didn't face that many average defenders in a box. Of course, they don't want to give credit to Andy Reid for being an absolute genius and putting him in positions to be successful. And of course, they're not going to load the goddamn box. Patrick Mahomes is going to pick him apart with his arm. You want more defenders guarding the pass. It's what they do. You can't put one guy on Tyreek Hill, and you can't not bracket Travis Kelce. But even if we were just looking at his number 9 overall light front carry rate, we'd also be looking at his number 46 running back fucking run blocking efficiency. So it's not like he had some top 2 run blocking efficiency and he's transitioning from college to the NFL. You know how many guys have had an average or just great year one before they transition into this lightning in a bottle fantasy asset? How ridiculous, how stupid are you guys gonna feel when he finishes the year as a top 10 running back, like he very well could have last year if he had just played 2 more games? It's so funny that the analysis would have changed. If he would have finished as a top, if he would have just played 2 more games, people would have been like, oh, he was great. Irrespective of the numbers themselves, they just would have been like, well, he was top 10. I don't know what to tell you guys, but Clyde Edwards is a really good player. He ended up in a really good offense, and you're just going to have to suck it for a while and understand the fact that this guy played well in an offense that didn't run block as expected, but still got better this year. And you hear him talking about it right now, that the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line this year is supposed to be really good. And all of a sudden, here comes people turning the corner. They're dragging this heavy bag of excuses behind them. They're like, fine. Yeah, I'm with you. I support Clyde Edwards. I've been there all along. I was standing here. I was just behind you, but I was close. I could see you. I could hear you. Anyways, Jesse, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, most popular card purchase over the last 30 days. Jesse, we got a question from Brady Miller, one of the patrons, patreon.com/I'm Outraged. Listen, guys, I want to tell you that Ethan Motz, one of Jesse and I's friends, dude, smart, smart card, you know, enthusiast, researcher, right? All of it. I mean, speak on his behalf, but this guy is amazing.
It would be interesting to talk to him live one day on the show, perhaps. That's certainly within the realm of possibility. But he's found his lane. He is, as a grader, he is like insane. He has like the eyes of a falcon in terms of spotting anything that's wrong with any raw card. Like, this guy's gem rate in terms of how he grades is like incredible. He just knows what to like. He's a very sharp dude. I'm happy that I get to talk with him on like an almost daily basis. Yeah, he's and his articles on the Patreon page for the Auction Hunter articles, they've been fantastic. I mean, I read them every week, and there's honestly cards that I consider buying myself every week.
Yeah, he's incredible, and that's what I wanted to get to, is he does the Auction Hunter articles, and he's going to do other things in the future, and they're up there every Friday. He does a really good job of leading you to excellent cards. And Jesse, I think you might have just solved our grader shortage. PSA, they need more graders. They should hire falcons. Why have they not thought about this? If they hired more falcons, there's so many out there. They could put them in a cage, put a little seed in there, put some water, and just pump out card grades, right? You could teach them to do a lot of things. I don't know why we couldn't teach them to grade cards. Jesse, so Brady Miller asks, what is the most underrated set for football? So when you think through your sets, and I guess the question would be, when I think about the terms underrated, I think of it from a value perspective. I think of it from a potential upside perspective, you know, long-term collectability perspective. Is there one that checks a box for you?
Personally, and we're talking modern here, so I'm not going back far. Out of all the modern football sets, the most underrated, I would say, is Optic, and that's because some here and there aren't, but a majority of the autos in Optic are on card, and you pay up to get a contender's Optic box for on card autos, and you get like two a box, whereas I'd have to look up the pack odds for Optic, for just regular Optic, but the cards are super nice. I'm kind of digging into another like subtopic in this question, but the amount of parallels that Panini is pumping out for like Prism and Select, it's just like, honestly, for me, it just might be too many parallels. Like, I'm a simple guy. I don't know. Like, I really like the cool design of cards. Some of them are really cool, but just like, I don't know if we need five different types of gold. Like, why don't we just have like 1 to 2 gold refractor out of 10 cards? I feel like Panini's been messing. I don't want to say messing, that's an aggressive term, but like they've been fiddling around with Optic the least. So they've kind of kept Optic the most true to what it's always been since its initial release in 2016. So from a purity perspective, and from a collectability and a simplicity perspective, and from a price perspective, I probably like Optic the most, in terms of what you're getting, like in terms of the bang for your buck. And like I said, the autos are on card. The parallels in that set are beautiful. Like, Nate, you obviously know about this, the Black Pandora out of 25, like, That's just, I don't have any myself, but that is such a beautiful parallel. It's not even funny. And it's like, it's so simple. Like, it's just such like a simple parallel. And I think 25 is like a perfect amount for it. They have non-autos of that parallel. They have autos, obviously gold. Like, I love really anything gold. And I didn't mention this, but Optic Gold just kind of, depending on the year, but most years of Optic Gold, they just kind of give me Topps Chrome Gold vibes. I don't know, and I'm a huge Topps Chrome fan, so I would probably say out of all the modern sets, Optic is by far for me the most underrated.
Optic, it looks really cool, and like you said, they have some really cool parallels. I do love the of 25, and I actually like that, as you mentioned, it's intermixed with on card autos or no auto. I think that that's kind of a unique way to do that same serial numbered group of cards. But yeah, for sure. I mean, when I go searching, for whatever reason, I always find myself trending that direction because I just find that those cards have a cool look graphically, the way they put them together. They just, that the continuity of it has stayed together, and it's a really cool looking card for its price point, for its upside. I mean, because you can get them relatively inexpensive if you find guys that are sort of fallen to the wayside temporarily. But conversely, go look at their ceiling. Many of these cards can go for a lot of money if you get the right card and the right player, and it would gems out, or you know, you can buy so much raw stuff too. Oh my God, how much raw stuff is there on eBay?
Honest to God, you don't even have to go to players that fell by the wayside. Like, you can look at somebody like a Patrick Mahomes. All Brady stuff is really expensive right now, so he's not a great example. But somebody who's going to be relevant in cardboard for a long time. Like, even think about somebody like Aaron Rodgers, where if you look at his, obviously his Prism Gold is going to be like, it's just going to be a shit ton of money that not a lot of people are going to be willing to drop immediately for a card like that, no matter how beautiful it is. But if you compare a Prism Gold or a Prism Select field level gold out of 10, and you compare those two cards to the Optic Gold, it, from what I've been seeing, the Optic Gold always goes for the least amount of money. I mean, that's kind of a lie just because Mosaic goes for a little bit less, but that's just because Mosaic, they just have so many damn gold parallels. They have Gold Wave, Gold Shimmer, Gold Disco, gold whatever the fuck. So, I love gold, but like, that's just, dude, don't destroy gold, please, Panini. Gold Optic, you can get them for a fraction of the price of Prism and Select gold cards.
Yeah, there's a lot out there. I love your answer. So Brady, take Jesse's advice. Go look at Optic. It's something that I've collected, and I think it's for sure the perfect sort of cross-sectional area of everything that people in the consumer market that aren't looking to necessarily blow every single dollar they have can go to find some really nice stuff. So Jesse, thank you again. Thanks for holding it together for the whole show. There was a couple coughs off to the side. I just tried to talk louder. You know, just like over the top of them. Maybe I'll throw like a clap in when you would cough. So great episode as usual. And we will be back next week on Clear the Cache.